Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who either just had a major cooking accident or just got involved in a serious flower fight. It's David Cross.
What's going on, dude?
It's been a long time, my friend.
It's been minutes.
Yeah. So if you guys are listening, we recorded an episode over Skype, and I know it's weird that we're saying this up front, but yeah, only my recording went, so I had to call you back, and so we're back at it for part two.
All I got to say is Bloodshot can't die and neither can MMF.
That's right. We keep going.
We're going to make it happen. That should also say how hyped I am to talk about this movie, that I'm going to talk about it again.
I mean, there's just so much in this movie. And so if you missed the first the episode we recorded, I actually made David cry. He sang Bohemian Rhapsody by himself, the entire song. No, but I think My brilliant words about the movie made you cry. I didn't bully you into crying, correct?
Yes, I was crying because I felt so strongly that this movie is an Oscar contender.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is okay. If there was a category for $45 million movie that knows what it is, gets the job done, and is meant for entertainment, would this be nominated?
Yes.
This movie.
Yes.
Like, you can't sit there and say this is not the Casablanca of superhero movies, but it is the Casablanca of what this movie is what it wanted to be. So do you think when they went into making this movie, when I say they, I mean like the director, I mean like Dave Wilson, the producer, Jeff Wadlow, who wrote it, the entire team, do you think this is what they wanted in the end?
Well, it's what they wanted because they released it.
But that's true.
I think they set out with a goal of making a medium to small budget superhero movie, which is exceptionally difficult in this day and age when the audiences, that's you and me and everyone else, are conditioned to view superhero movies as being like $200 to $300 million.
Exactly.
Like, this was made with 10% of what other heroes movies have made. So like, yeah, this is what they wanted. You know, this is a straight B movie film that gets the job done.
Now, I just want to kind of dispel some myths that have been made about this film. And there are some people who I really trust. Uh-oh, what's good? You got the nanobites in you? Are they going through your system, tearing you up?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I think I have a little bit of allergies.
Uh-oh. But the peanut butter?
Yes. I had a big mouthful of peanut butter before this episode started, and we had to delay it because I needed water.
Well, that's the scene in this movie, too. I mean, that's the linchpin of this film. He wants to go get the water from the peanut butter, and he learns that Guy Pearce is the evil scientist.
This water isn't wet enough.
But I guess one myth I want to dispel is that people are saying that this movie tanked at the box office. This movie did not tank at the box office because it never had a fair chance at the box office. When it was released, the Asian, European, African markets were closed down. So it came here when people were very worried about the coronavirus. And so it's only made about $10 million. But no one went to the theaters that weekend. It was the worst weekend since the 90s or 80s. And that's even with inflation not even accounted for. So it's not, we don't know whether or not this movie tanked. I think overseas with his, this is a Chinese-backed film in China, Japan, then you have Korea, you have the European markets, you have South America. I think with those markets, this probably would have pulled in 100 mil. Or at least, I would say in the range of 80 to 100 million worldwide, which
absolutely
would have covered the $45 million production budget and the $30 million there or abouts to market it.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I thought it was about $30 million produced and $15 million the market. So it was a total $45
million. Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, you read that?
Yeah. So if it hits 80 to 90, that is almost double what it cost to make. I would view that as a win. Like, I bet that studios are looking for, 2.5 to 3, maybe. I've read that somewhere. But if you double your money, that's awesome.
And I just think, and a lot of people are saying that, like, I don't think Vin Diesel and everyone making this movie thought it was going to be a Spider-Man Homecoming. No one thought.
No.
I think people were realistic about his openings for XXX3, which is amazing, by the way, which I love every second of. And Last Witch Hunter. I mean, they did not open big, but they did big overseas. So I think there was a realistic expectation in regards to this film.
Yeah, it was just a casualty of the pandemic. So you said that no one went to the theater that weekend. I was one of those people who did. And nice. I can relate to you what was going on. So I set out to see this movie specifically in the theater, and nothing near me was showing it. So I ended up seeing The Hunt instead. And I was one of maybe five people in this theater. And this was probably at like 5 o'clock, and I got home at 7:38. And by the time I got home, the theater that I went to had sent out an email closing for the weekend.
Wow.
I saw like literally probably the last movie in the theater.
Nobody wanted, like no one went. So I don't understand these articles coming out by very people who I respect for websites like Forbes saying that this film tanked.
They're doing that because it's easy. You know, yeah. It's not a nuanced argument. Like saying something like what we're arguing here is that this movie didn't tank, that it was a casualty of the virus, is difficult because it makes you say, okay, so this movie might not be my favorite, but it wasn't given the opportunity. And they're just saying this movie's bad and that's why it tanked.
Yeah,
but it didn't tank. It just didn't have the opportunity.
These are smart people. Is there like a Venn agenda? It's a weird. Like I'm not a conspiracy theorist. It's just a weird thing that such smart people be writing such like NPR. Call this movie like next to nothing. They said that it's just a tiny nanobite of a film, but it didn't want to be a massive movie. It wanted to be Bloodshot, a little nerdy fun movie with special effects by Weta, with, you know, like some really fun stunts, like I don't know, good special effects. Like it, I don't think it wanted to be a gigantic movie. So it, yeah. Even the complaints about it are sort of not taking this movie too seriously.
Yeah. So what we talked about on the Missing podcast,
where you cried,
I cried,
my word,
was that, you know, there are different ways to view a film as a critic. You and I are both critics to some extent. I do it on my podcast, Award Wieners, and I also do it on our Instagram page. I write a movie review a couple a week. But there's different ways to review movies. I think a lot of these big time reviewers view movies in terms of everything that is out there, in the context of, in the history of movies, where does this movie sit? They don't view it in the context of, is this movie trying to accomplish the goal that it set out to do? And for me, Bloodshot accomplished the goal that it set out to do. It tells a engaging story on a minimal budget, and it's entertaining.
Do you think the comparisons to Hobbs and Shaw are fair? Because I read a lot of...
No, oh my God.
It's such a weird...
Are you kidding me?
That's a $150 million movie. It's a very odd – people are just bringing in the rivalry between these guys. But, I mean, it's a different beast.
It's totally different. Different. Like, that makes no sense to me. Absolutely no sense why you would compare those two movies. That's absurd. It's asinine, actually.
Now that we're getting into the movie, the one thing I got to say about it is they should not put Vin Diesel in helmet. I'm not saying anything about his head. Like, I have a weird-shaped head. I just had glasses ordered for me. And when you look at your screen and why am I not getting this right? I don't know. What do you call them? David, help me out here. They just didn't fit on my head. My head was too long. So I'm not
your
making fun of Vin.
Your head was too wide? Head was too wide?
It was just too long. So like they didn't go over my ears.
Yeah.
And so I did not phrase that eloquently, but Vin Diesel with this helmet, it's.
He's a guy who doesn't look good in almost anything, unless it's a sleeveless tank.
Yeah, all right, so there's a scene in this movie in the beginning of the film when he's come back from his mission, he's successful, he gets the hostage back, and his wife is there waiting for him, and he immediately rips off his jacket, and he has a pristine white tank top on. That has to be, he gets it. Vin Diesel gets it. He knows his brand, right?
Yeah, I mean, let's actually... talk about his brand.
Okay.
Let's mark, what are the Vin Diesel trademarks?
Vin Diesel trademarks.
Yeah. We already said tank. He has a tank top. Black okay. or white tank
yeah.
top.
So, yeah. So, all right. Tank tops, fist fights. There has to be... Okay, he has to be larger than life. So, in the latest Fast movies, he's essentially bulletproof and he beats up the entire gang. In The Last Witch Hunter, he is... immortal, mm-hmm. and he never loses. In this one, he gets nanobites in his body and becomes unstoppable. Mm-hmm. So I think his brand is just, even in Pacifier, he's the baddest dude on the planet. So I think it's gruff but kind guy who embraces family, wears tank tops, and can beat the living daylights out of people.
Yeah, I think those are all perfect. He might embody the idea of speak softly and carry a big stick.
Yeah.
Because he gives off this vibe of like, I don't want to do this. Just leave me alone. But if you mess with me, you're screwed.
Yeah, you're right. Like he, and you know what's what I like about this movie, which he gave himself credit for, but in this movie, unlike Vin Diesel, like most movies in the past, this guy's three steps behind. So in Last Witch Hunter, he knows, spoilers, that Elijah Wood is a bad, like he knows everything that's going to happen. So it's kind of fun watching Vin play catch up. It's fun watching people make fun of him in these movies. They know he's a tank. They know if they shoot him in a direction, he will go that way, and he does it. So I think that's fun watching that progression of his character.
Yeah, it is a unique character for him because he does usually play the person who's both physically and mentally tougher than everyone else. And in this case, he needs multiple people to help him because he has no clue what is going on.
And I love his backup in this movie.
Oh yeah, you want to mention his name?
Yeah, Wilford Wiggins. Yeah,
so good. He's like a bright, shining star. So there was a lot of negativity to this movie, at least from critics. But almost all of them I've read pointed to this character and were like, but he's awesome.
Yeah, he's just fun. Like when you first meet him, he's hacking on some computers, telling people not to look at his butt. And then he saves Vin Diesel. And one of my favorite parts about this movie, which I don't know why I appreciated, and in the last podcast you kind of said that you had missed, but I like when Wiggins brings him back to life. He wakes him up. He gives Vin everything he needs. He doesn't want Vin going back onto his nanobyte internet because they'll just get a hold of him and shut him down. He wants him going on a different cell phone, use an analog car. And then he's like, man, how about you just say thank you? Because Vin walked out originally, not saying thank you. And as soon as Wilford Wiggins says, please, man, just say thank you to me, for the rest of the movie, all Ray Garrison, a.k.a. Vin Diesel, a.k.a. Bloodshot, does is say thank you. Like, so at the end, when he brings him back, and he'll never have to recharge nanobytes, thank you. And he means it. And then when he gets the cars, thank you. He's not doing it selfishly. I think he's just this kind of dude that's on a mission, then he forgot that this guy saved his life, and the rest of his movie, he appreciated him. That's a neat character touch, and I dug it.
Yeah, it's a really good character touch. His other characters don't quite have that feeling.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, like very rarely are there thank yous.
Yeah, I mean, I keep thinking about you bringing up that he needs to be saved. In the long run, he's not the leader, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you look at Pitch Black, he becomes the leader. He makes the plans. In Fast and Furious, it's the Dom show.
Yeah.
Calder is the leader. Like, there's no, like, clear leader in this. It's like other people are telling him what to do, and then he has to figure a way out of it.
Wow. That's a fun, like, so do you have all the reviews? I never read that in the reviews at all. Did you pick up on that?
No. I mean, basically what I read in the reviews are the same things that you mentioned on. They're like, this movie doesn't bring anything new. The CGI is a little muddled, and Vin Diesel plays Vin Diesel. And I think this is a good transition point, actually, to talk about, you know, why people both hate and like Vin Diesel. I'm a big Vin Diesel fan.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about him is that he, as a person, is a giant freaking nerd.
Yes, he is. He's Last, like, Witch Hunter, right?
Yeah, Last Witch Hunter. The Last Witch Hunter is based off his personal D&D character.
Yes.
Like, imagine having enough money that you're like, I'm going to bring my D&D character to life. That's amazing.
Well, will you make another Fast and Furious movie for us? I'll make three. Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
Three? That series is never going to end.
Yeah, it better not.
But I like him because it's so ridiculous. And I think he's self-aware of what is happening.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, he knows that in the Fast and Furious movies that it's absurd and that they're just upping it one after another after another. And he's leaning into it. He leans into the persona. And I think a lot of people don't recognize that it's sort of an ongoing joke.
I mean, yeah. Because he's a smart guy. Do you ever listen to him in interviews?
I have. He's very smart.
Very well spoken. And so there's no way that he's just a giant kind of meathead who doesn't understand his roles are silly. Like, he gets, and I think that's the persona he wants. And you know what's interesting? He's gotten, we never know what happened on the Fast and the Furious world, but I mean, he brought in The Rock. Like, he gives all these people chances, and then they kind of give him the bad press. So I don't know. I'm a big fan, but I guess people, do you think they? You made a good point that people can maybe associate him with 80s, 90s action movies, kind of an antiquated type of character.
Yeah, so when I first started thinking about Bloodshot, I was initially saying that this movie feels very 2000s. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's 2000s. I think it's this very specific time, the late 90s. This feels like 98, 97, 99. And that could be because at that point there was a lot of, how do I put this, anti-hero going on.
Got it.
More so than I think there is now.
You had the cheeky villain who was kind of over the top a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then you had like Nick Cage maybe. Well, no, he was really great in the late 90s. He wasn't really an anti-hero, but like Face Off. A little bit of an anti-hero.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It gives this feeling of just like...
Transporter was an anti-hero.
Yeah, Transporter definitely was. That's a great good point. It's like this kept pent-up rage of like, I can't do the things I want to do and I'm angry about it. I don't know if that quite makes sense.
Yeah.
And that hasn't necessarily kept up. Like, we still do anti-hero stuff now, but it's not like it was... previously. And what I think happened here is that some of the critics latched onto that and are like, this feels dated.
Yeah.
But it's telling the story of something that was immensely popular in the 90s, that was created in the 90s, and of course it's going to feel a little bit dated.
And what's interesting is once we learn what the story is, all of those kind of emotions, all those things that he was going through and his missions were programmed. So,
and they made so much more sense and made them funny in retrospect.
Yes, so especially the Toby Kebbell scene where he's dancing to what, Psycho Killer by Talking Heads in socks and slippers, and he has a No Country for Old Men cow killer, and you take the trope of killing the wife, and then he actually kills Vin Diesel. But then later on we learn that Eric the programmer was the one who uses all those movie cliches, and he programmed that, and he gets chastised later on for doing that.
And when I first saw that, I kind of laughed because the guys making fun of him was like, this isn't good enough. But the director of the place had to have approved it. So yeah. It's really his fault.
But it works, though. Like, I think Toby Kebbell has a fun little dance in it.
I love that scene. I absolutely love the scene.
And yeah. Then I kind of like it more that it was programmed like that in his head, just so he envisions it. Like, it's funny. It's funny to me. And even so, there are moments in movies, and I say this a lot, and I actually teach this to my students, where there are movies that they seem written, and you're just like, oof, that line is written. Every line is written. But then there's other lines that play more naturalistic. You don't feel the writer's presence patting himself on the back. Does that make sense? There's no...
Yeah.
So when you watch Toby Kebbell dance, I didn't feel like it was a hyper-stylized, I'm the coolest person ever. No one's ever done this before. I just thought it was cheeky. And then when I learned that it was a program that was cliched and they made fun of him for it, it made me like it even more. And I didn't even dislike it to begin with.
Yeah. So you know what we should do? We should try to pinpoint all the movies that were ripped off in this opening scene.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Because when I was watching it, here are the things that I thought of. And I bet we're probably close to the same here. One, do you remember the game Counter-Strike?
I do not.
It was a very popular game. It might still be popular. I don't know. But it basically felt like the opening scene when you're running around shooting guns and shooting into walls. So I thought about that. I think they definitely ripped off No Country for Old Men and Reservoir Dogs.
Yep.
And here's
for sure.
And here's one that I think is more subtle. I think they made an inside joke to the original Fast and Furious when he picks his wife up and holds her. Because they do that in the first movie, and it was a major part of the advertising, which he did that with Michelle Rodriguez.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they picked her up, because that mm-hmm. was big in Fast and Furious. And also there's some, I would say, RoboCop in there.
Yeah.
Well, that's later on.
Yeah. It would be really interesting if they would have leaned into this a little bit more.
Yeah. I liked what you said about the comics, where the Valiant comics, where the things inside them worship them and can make them do other things. That would have...
Oh, yeah. So let's tell everyone about that. So this movie is based off the character Bloodshot from Valiant Comics. It was a pretty popular character in the 90s, and I would say relatively popular now, but nowhere near its peak. And there's been multiple iterations of this character, and different writers have done different takes on it, just like every single character out there, except maybe Batman. But one of the interpretation was that the nanites in his body were somewhat sentient and worshipped him as a god. And that's something I would love to see in a sequel if it ever happens. It's such a crazy concept. Could you imagine a scene of like Vin Diesel talking to Vin Diesel in his mind? Oh, yeah, my God.
That needs to happen. And we talk, I like superheroes who have, it's a blessing and a curse. So you have Hulk, right? You have Jean Grey or Storm. You can't really touch people. No, that's Rogue. Rogue can't really touch people. I like people whose powers, it's like, yeah, I'm powerful, but like it also sucks, but it's great. Does that make sense? Like, I like that. So Superman, what's really, like, I've liked Superman movies, but I've never gotten into the comics because I never just thought, what's the downside of this? Like, what's terrible? But if he's freezing up in the middle of a fight because his nanites are worshiping him, I mean, that's hilarious. Like, that's, I don't know. I would love to see him play that and just go that route, because I think Vin is capable of that, of having some fun with it.
Yeah. So here's something interesting, Mark. I wrote my thesis in grad school on Superman.
Oh,
I don't know if you knew. I don't know if you knew this.
Shots fired.
Yeah. So here's the thing about Superman. I always feel like I have to defend him. And I get the interpretation that he has no enemies because he has all these powers. His struggle isn't that he can't overcome people, is that he is trying to do good in a world that's bad. Yes. It's all internal, which can be difficult to show in comic books. There's this scene in one of the comics that I think illustrates like a potential for Superman that people don't really touch on. And Superman is talking to his cousin, who I believe is Supergirl, and they're talking about whether they can have sex with normal people. And Superman's just like, never. I mean, the implication is like, he'll kill them by accident. He's like, he's constantly has to be in control or he'll wreck everything. And it's a really sad, poignant moment, realizing that the most powerful man in the world is also incredibly lonely.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, I wish you hadn't told me that, because I like think of Superman as a, you know, boring, but I like that. That's good.
But he could be, let's be honest. He could be boring. If it's just a slugfest, it is very boring. You have to be able to write him really well. And a lot of people cannot write that character very well.
I thought his character in Superman Returns was kind of intriguing as this kind of loner. Like, he didn't, James Marsden saved the day in Superman Returns.
Definitely.
I like that kind of Superman.
Yeah,
I don't know if
I like unfairly maligned.
I don't know if I like. I like Henry Cavill a lot, and I'll defend his Man of Steel fight at the end, but his whole sad fisherman thing, I didn't really buy. Like,
I mean, that's the character's point of view. It's like he's trying to come to grips with he has all these powers that he can't show or do anything with, and he doesn't know what to do with them. Again, it's an internal character, which is just not shown very well in a lot of places. But I feel like we're also going way abreast of Bloodshot, right?
But, no, I think we're, but I kind of like that we're looking at, I mean, this is a superhero movie, and so I kind of like looking at other superheroes, because like you said, Valiant, this character is not a wholly original character.
Oh, no, not at all.
And so it's kind of interesting, too, when people said that this movie somebody said that this movie borrows from Memento. And I'm like, yeah, but this character was created before Memento. So that shows the depth of research people did on this. This is a big thing. I'm like, wait a second, that blew my mind. I kind of had to stop reading these reviews about this movie because, like we said, there's very little actual data about this movie since it's so new, research about this movie. We do know that the budget's $45 million. I do know that the special effects were by Weta, which is awesome, the practical effects. The director, Dave Wilson, was in visual effects. He did one of the episodes in Love, Death, and the Robots. He had worked with Marvel before and done video games. I like that Tom Brown, the production designer, dude's worked on Saving Private Ryan, Dune, Denis Villeneuve's Dune, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, Spy, and the latest Tomb Raider. So this movie, and the cinematographer has done all the Purge movies and had recently worked on Mile 22. So I think that they're, on one more thing I got to read, which I love. The second unit director and the guy who did a lot of the stunts in this film, who did a lot of those, his name is JJ, where is he at? I have all of his movies over here. I got to find his name. I'm getting there. Second unit director. Let's see. And of course, when I say I have it, I can't find it, but I'm going to go to full cast and crew. So the second unit director was, here we go. We're getting there. JJ Perry. And I don't know if you know this, but he was the stunt coordinator on John Wick 2. This dude was he was Scorpion in Mortal Kombat Annihilation. He was Johnny Cage's stunt double in Mortal Kombat, Paul Anderson's movie. He's worked on Fate of the Furious, Warrior. He won Stuntman of the Year in 2003 for the Rundown. I mean, this guy just worked. He was a stunt coordinator on Fast 9, this guy. He was a stunt coordinator on Skyscraper. So, I mean, the guy who directed Second Unit and did the stunts in this movie is a massive name. He also did Last Witch Hunter, London Has Fallen, Mechanic Resurrection. So, like, there's a lot of talent, man. And they took this $45 million and they made it look good. And I guess a case in point is, I like the set when, so Vin gets brought in, he gets killed, but then he wakes up and then he finds out that he's become a super soldier. He meets the three other super soldiers that are there, and eventually at night he goes to work out because he can't sleep. So he learns he can bench press 1,000 pounds, curling 200 pounds is easy. He destroys a load-bearing concrete pole, which is insane. But I like that a lot of these shots are lit by the pool in the background. It's a very thoughtful, interesting thing, and I know there's a weird synchronized swimming bit from Isaac Gonzalez, but I don't know, it's a unique set that's lit interestingly enough, and there's a lot of excellent overhead shots, so there's a flowers fight for Pete's sake. So I don't know, I think this $45 million, all of it's on screen, and I think everyone seems very passionate about the outcome of it.
I think that gets back to us viewing this movie in terms of what it's trying to be and not in terms of what we want it to be.
This is
a journeyman craftsman movie. I believe this is the director's first full length film. So like in everything that has happened in this film, I think it's a radical success, and I'm actually really bummed out that it got hamstrung by the pandemic. And I know that it's doing well on Amazon relatively, but they're not going to recoup the same amount of money on Amazon as a $20 purchase as they would in the theaters. So I guess the question this leads into is, like, do you think the Valiant universe is tanked?
Yeah. I mean, the tough thing is, if it's not tanked, it's not going to get the budgets it wanted. To make another one, it's going to need the same $40 million budget. So they're going to have to keep being these scrappy films like this one. So I don't think, if they make another one, it's a $40 million budget. And it's a scrappy little picture. So they're just going to have to go the John Wick route, or go somewhere like that to bring in more like budget conscious fight scenes.
Yeah. In terms of Valiant, what I'm really shocked with is that they chose Bloodshot instead of what I think is probably their most popular character with it, which is Ninjak, which is a Batman analog. And just to clear this up, Bloodshot is essentially a combination of Wolverine and Captain America. So like, there's no such thing as original concept in Valiant. Let's just be frank. But I don't want to like shit on them, because there's really no such thing as original idea, period. I mean, like, everyone's just stealing from everyone else.
Like, don't you have Wade Wilson with Slade Wilson? I mean, it's just that's where Deadpool got his name, from somebody else. Like, it's I don't know. There's Superman-esque characters. There's 18 variations of Superman.
So you mean Shazam?
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of Oh, but we'll make him a kid, so it's better. So, right? And so I don't get the hate on this when everything cannibalizes from each other. The weird, I think people do it when they either have an agenda, or they don't like the person, or they didn't like the movie. But if you love the movie, I mean, all right, listen, Parasite was not the first movie about class warfare, right?
No, it was, not at all.
And it wasn't the first thriller where people ingratiate themselves into people's lives. So the plot is new, but it's not the first kind of class warfare type picture. I'm not shitting on Parasite, because I love that movie, but does that make sense?
Yeah, I get it.
I maybe picked the wrong movie, but
one of the things that I have discovered while being a movie critic, a fledgling movie critic, even though I've been doing this forever, is it's easier to write a negative review than it is to write a positive review.
Yeah.
It's more interesting to write a negative review. And I feel like a lot of people put more effort into their negative reviews than they do their positive reviews.
Yeah, I guess if you write a zinger of a line about a movie, it's going to get more press than... Yeah, Bloodshot is a totally adequate $45 million movie that features some inspired fight scenes, an international cast, and an economical approach that will prove to be a fun diversion during this time. Like, no one's going to... Yeah. Hey, that's really good.
That is really good. You should put that on a poster.
Shoot. Crap. You know, in old school, when Will Ferrell answers that question beautifully, then he's like, I blacked out. That was me just then. I have realized that so I've gotten a lot, you know, it's really gotten me some jobs, and it's gotten me with Rotten Tomatoes, and the Tom Cruise article was big, and I've done some big data articles, but I kind of miss writing movie reviews because that's how I started. But I also realized that there are people who write much better movie reviews than me. And so I enjoy my data angle because it's differently. But I do, there's occasionally movies I love to write reviews for. So I just wrote a review for VFW. I wrote a review for The Lodge. I wrote a review for Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I guess I write them more, and I'm going to write one for this when I want to get my voice out there for them.
Especially when it's being overlooked. Yeah.
Because, you know, I love Wonder Woman. I think that's an excellent superhero movie. Or I love, let's see, I love Ant-Man and the Wasp. But those movies don't need my help. So that's why I kind of like putting something like a review for Bloodshot into the world. So maybe some people read it and be like, oh, hey, maybe I should watch this. Maybe I should rent it when it's available. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a good 2 hours to on a Friday night. Like it is literally exactly what you want. And we're just so trained to want these giant $200,000 movies, these $150,000 movies. But the world also needs 30 million to 40 million movies. Like, they can't all be giant tent poles. Mm-hmm. We need these smaller movies to push forward more interesting concepts, and at least give a chance to more interesting concepts.
And every time an original film fails, like maybe a Jupiter Ascending or films like that, it bums me out because I know that's one less thing that might be funded in the future. So yeah. I guess what I like now is there are, like, I like that there's movies out there such as Knives Out or Ford vs. Ferrari that I'm not saying they're superhero movies, but there are movies that aren't superhero movies that are making $100 million that are being mm-hmm. nominated for Oscars. And I wish we would have more $30 to $40 million movies, because there's a couple things, and I was talking about this with my students. So I just lectured my students about 1990s and early 2000s cult classics. We watched Donnie Darko. I talked to them about the cult of that. And when these movies are cheaper, I think they're allowed to take more chances. They're allowed to be a little bit more different. When you get to $200 million, and rightly so, there's just more eyes on it. There's what's the next movie? What's this movie? What are we doing that for? Can we do this? Will this affect a release in China? And so I like that these smaller movies, smaller in air quotes, they can be more flexible. They can tell darker tones. They don't have to be as big. They don't have mm-hmm. to be as grandiose. They can feature flower fights, for Pete's sake. So, I don't know. I want these movies to succeed because I think that's good for cinema.
It is. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I am a big supporter of the Blumhouse model. I mean, they're putting out $10 million movies. Yeah. And sure, you're going to get a couple of them that stink, but overall, they're all pretty interesting.
Yeah. And like A24, too. Like, hey, yeah. Like yeah. Them, Neon, Blumhouse. I mean, Blumhouse has just succeeded so well because if you make 7 movies, 4 make the theaters, 2 hit big, you paid for all 7, and you paid for the next 8. So it's just, it's a glorious business model. And also, what I kind of like is, another thing I like about this film, where I'm a fan of Dwayne Johnson, I like his movies. There's just times in movies like Rampage or San Andreas where he's like, oh, I need to steal a helicopter, I'll fly it easily. Oh, I need a plane, I'll fly that. Oh, I need to get this helicopter in here. Oh, I need to get this boat. Oh, I need to get this sports car. Here is a prototype airplane. I got it. I can fly that. And you watch these movies and they're just so almost too talented. They're choking out people with no problems. They don't get hurt by beanbag bullets. And in this movie, I laughed when I first watched it because when Vin wakes up, he goes through the whole rigmarole with Guy Pearce and somehow they set him up to go on this mission. And I love that he goes into the parking garage and there's a truck waiting for him. It's like, why does he know this is his truck? Like, who? And so
I did the same thing.
In my head, I'm like, this is what? And then he gets into an airplane, but the nanobites read the memory. And so anything he gets into, the nanobites will figure out because he can plug into them. So it's a way mm-hmm. of making your hero know everything, but then you realize the truck was placed there, of course, and the jet was placed there. But I like that these nanobites is nerdy. I love Vin Diesel movies, like, God bless him. Like Last Witch Hunter, this is so nerdy. The nanobites help him fly Learjets. It makes me so happy. And it's just, this is a great excuse, not than it just being, oh, my character's a badass.
Yeah. I mean, this film benefits from more than one watch. because the first time you're watching it, you're like, why is it set up like this? And then it takes 30 minutes for you to understand it's purposely weird and that all these things are being set up and all your complaints about it sort of disappear. And then when you watch it a second time, you better understand that it's supposed to be set up like this.
Mm-hmm. Now, my biggest regret, and I want to see what you think about this, but there's a scene in the movie where Guy Pearce punches a table, a metal table, and he kind of caves it in. And I just went, is Guy Pearce going to fist fight Vin Diesel at the end of this movie? Is there going to be... They didn't even let him... I was like, in Iron Man 3, I was like, is Guy Pearce going to fist fight Iron Man? So I wish there would have been more of a fist fight, but I do like his tactic in this movie where when Bloodshot's finally coming towards him, Guy Pearce just pulls out this massive bazooka, not a bazooka, a giant bullet, and just shoots it at him. And I'm like, that's really smart. Like, who cares about fist fights? Blow him up. I love that scene.
That's why he was in charge.
Yeah. I love it. It just made me happy about that. But, you know, do you think this movie also, it gives a lot of time to other characters? So KT, you get a lot of time with her. She gets her own fight scene. She beats up a bunch of dudes. Then you get Lamorne Morris, who chews every piece of scenery beautifully. Then you get Eric, the tech guy, who, I mean, there's an entire subplot about how he wants modification on his member because everyone's saying 6 inches isn't big enough. Listen, it's a juvenile plot line, but this is a movie that gives this actor another, like, I don't know. I liked the scope of it. I liked the few characters. I like that, you know, if you think about Vin, he doesn't really have many great moments in this. My favorite moments belong to the setup of the fights or the flower scene or... What, also, I loved what you said. There's a motorcycle chase in this movie that doesn't do any big jumps. It's just a practical motorcycle chase. And the elevator fight scene at the end, you know what I liked about that was I was able to... This is a big thing we talk about with fight scenes, and we talked about this on an Aquaman episode that's coming up. Fight scenes really work with me when I understand the geography of the location. And I feel like I understood the geography of the locations for these fight scenes. They made sense to me narratively.
The Jackie Chan School of Fighting.
Yeah. Exact. Just know where it's at, right?
Yeah. So one thing that you mentioned is that there are a lot of other characters who have cool moments into it. And we talked about this on the Missing podcast. But there were critics who said the relationship between KT and Vin Diesel's character was strange. And what I think they missed about it was that it wasn't a romantic relationship. There was no point at which I thought those two were going to hook up.
You know what's kind of crazy? The same people who cheered Hobbs and Shaw, and Jason Statham makes out with the same actress, Isa Gonzalez, in Hobbs and Shaw, and he's older than Vin Diesel. And no one complained about that, but they're complaining. But in this movie, for the first hour, he thinks his wife is dead, so he's in mourning. There's nothing between these two. Then he meets his wife. She's like, you haven't been here for 5 years. Like, get out of here. You're a creeper. So he goes back. So this scene, I think it's more of like a mutual respect, a wounded warrior. There's no inclination of any of that. And I think sometimes they're framed closely together, but that's for like an easy over-the-shoulder shot, like to get them in the frame together to shoot it quicker. There's none of that. Like, they're both kind of lost souls. She was killed. And this guy Pierce is basically he's very abusive towards her. He's like, I will kill you at any time if you leave. And so she's got her own crap to get over, right? Like, and then he's got his stuff. Like, they're not a relationship of like sexual attraction. I think they're more coworkers that are going to go on missions together.
Yeah, exactly. And it's strange that we're so trained to think that if there's a man and a woman on TV, on screen, they're going to end up together. Like, we're supposed to think that they're end up together. I like that they're more or less partners and not romantically involved. I'm going to say that I don't know if the comic book character has a romantic relationship with anyone. I'm only going off the movie.
I do think that people – one thing I try to avoid is – so I know some very, very, very smart people who go into movies with expectations or preconceived notions, and then if that doesn't live up to it, they don't like the movie. So I think sometimes people watch this movie, they think it's this hacky actioneer. Oh, this girl's just here to be a love interest. I think sometimes very smart people get caught thinking of old patterns, when I don't think that was the case with this one. And does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, expectations are kind of cloud them a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, the only weird scene for me in this whole film is the underwater dance scene or kata or I don't know what to call it, exercise scene. Yeah. It felt very much like they were trying to show us what her power was, which is being able to breathe underwater, I think. But the camera sort of lingered on too much on her. It's kind of a strange scene. It is the one part of the movie where I'm just like, what is happening here?
I guess for her, like, the problem is we don't see those moves later. So maybe if she would have gone to the bottom of the pool and practiced punches, does that make sense? Or kicks or like underwater training? Does that make sense? And then she fights somebody later on or has a water mission. Then you're like, okay. But yeah, this one felt very, we're going to show you 3 minutes of synchronized swimming.
with an attractive woman. Yeah. That was off. It was very, that was the one off putting scene. Yeah. So I've
definitely seen worse, but that doesn't make this one right.
Second Star Trek.
Yeah. Gosh. Oh man. And then you know what their defense was? That was, they're like, oh, well, we show Benedict Cumberbatch shirtless too. It's like, come on guys. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about my first WTF moment in this film.
Oh,
and you know what it is, but the second
I was trying to play like I didn't.
I know. It's okay. It's okay. I don't think we need to go too hard. But the second line of dialogue in this film is, ain't looking good, LT, soup sandwich in here. It makes no sense at all. What's a soup sandwich?
See, okay. So you typically, like a grilled cheese and tomato soup. But so you dunk the grilled cheese into the tomato soup. So the tomato soup, if someone threw tomato soup around a room, it looks like blood. And
Mark, I think you are on to something. So my initial concept was a soup sandwich would be a thin, shallow bowl filled with tomato soup with a grilled cheese floater. However, your interpretation is of taking something that is porous, a porous bread, and sticking it into soup, and it soaks up the soup. It literally becomes a soup sandwich.
Yep.
You cracked this mystery.
Nailed it, man. Like, you know when people do chili and they put crackers in the chili?
Oh, my God.
And the crackers absorb a lot of the juice, and then it becomes basically just a solid, and it's no longer chili?
I mean, that's what I do.
But, you know, it's funny. I didn't even notice that soup sandwich line. I was just too preoccupied thinking about Vin's helmet. Well, and then Toby Kebbell and his sandals and socks jumped in, and I was like, oh, this is it. I love this movie.
I watch my movies with a quarter mile at a time, 15 minutes at a time, with the closed captioning on, so I can see what they're actually saying and see if there's any difference. Because sometimes I like can't quite hear it. You know, sometimes the audio is not great. And that was just the immediate thing I saw, because I was like, how did I miss this the first time I watched this? This is insane.
I do want you to go back and look for the thank you moments. So okay. I think you'll like, because it's neat. Like, it's a cool little bit there by Vin Diesel. And I think, how about this? Let's take a quick break. Maybe you go back and watch that. Maybe you don't. But when we come back, we'll talk more Bloodshot. And we have some fun drafts coming up. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And can we talk about the flower fight scene?
I hope so. I mean, really excited for it.
This flower fight scene is, I know there's an elevator fight scene. I know there is a chase through the streets, yada, yada, yada. But there is this fight scene with the flower. So what happens is they're in a tunnel. Vin Diesel's character is hunting down Toby Kebbell because he thinks Toby Kebbell killed him and his wife. He blocks everybody in a tunnel, but a flower truck flips and flour goes everywhere and people punch through bags of flour. So what follows is a fight full of very interesting slow motion shots and mercenaries getting obliterated in various ways. But what I like about it is it showcases what his limits and capabilities are and his strengths. So I think it does a few things really well to showcase not only a good fight scene, but to showcase what his powers are.
Yeah. So my thoughts on this are the first one is, I am almost 100% sure that all those people would have been killed in a fire because flour is flammable.
Yeah.
So if you were in an enclosed space with a bunch of flour hanging in the air, there'd be like a mini flash fire and they would have been broiled.
Wait, you haven't heard about Carol's flour? It's non-flammable.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's okay. In this world. I saw an ad. I'm just making this up, but there's a scene where Vin Diesel's watching TV and it's like Carol's flour, now non-flammable. And it shows kids going, yay. So I think that's what it is.
I mean, it exists, I think, for a couple reasons, because it gives the opportunity to cover Vin Diesel in a white substance. So he's more reminiscent of the character from the comic book.
Yeah.
Right. It's also visually unique because, you know, they're on a limited budget, and this lets you create something that's strange and no one's ever seen before or probably even never thought of before. And I appreciate that. And
it's like with Mandy, they didn't have enough. So that podcast, which will come out soon, they didn't have enough money for rain. So they did that.
Yeah. And I guess what's interesting about this, if you have to think about it a little bit more, is the slow-mo. So we've seen the slow-mo done a lot, and there is a good amount in this film. But I think it's done on purpose because it highlights that Bloodshot isn't the type of character who's fast. He's not come running up to you and hit you. He is unstoppable. So he's just going to keep coming.
He's a tank.
And he is literally a tank. He's meant to take damage. A meat shield, I guess. And I think doing everything really quickly and like him doing flips, it's not in the vein of the character. The character is more or less like Jason Voorhees. Like, he's coming towards you. He is stalking you. You're going to try to get away, and it's not going to work because he can just soak up damage until he gets close enough.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at him in the comics, he was mostly just guns, right? Just big old guns. That's very really smart, 90s. Though. The flower, though, that's smart. The brings back the kind of white, because the character is covered in is basically all white, right? Kind of like the Joker almost color. Yeah. What are your three favorite bits from this flower fight?
The flower fight. Okay, so my number one bit is when he picks the guy up and holds him to the window.
Yeah.
And explodes it. My number two bit is when he rides the smiley face on the window. That's about the same scene, but it counts. And what I think's a really interesting part is when he gets kicked into the flower truck, and then everyone shoots into it. And it's not super innovative, but it shows that the director is thinking about how to save money.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, we'll just have them fire into this truck. Yeah. And it works in terms of the story as well. It's like, oh, you can't see if you've heard him or not. So then when he pops back up, it's scary.
So I loved when a merc slides and shoots his feet out.
Oh, yeah, that's smart.
So that merc is smart. And so then Vin Diesel reacts by just kicking the car into the guy. And it's a well-thought-out scene. And there's another scene where he pulls a door from a car and uses it as a hockey stick to hit a mercenary and hit two other mercenaries, which I absolutely loved. And then when his face gets shot, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's a unique scene, and I think it's getting unfairly maligned for being repetitive, but I don't see it that way. I think it stands on its own. So it's interesting.
And I loved it when Wiggins is like, he's punching holes through those people.
Oh, he's Trojan horse in it. Yeah,
that made me so happy when he's just like, because Bloodshot is punching holes through people.
Could you imagine this movie with an R rating?
I would love it with an R. Well, you know what, though? Watching this movie, I never thought I need more blood. Did you?
No, I didn't even know it was PG-13 until after I looked at it.
I thought it was R. So I think it's a case of not needing that. This movie is violent enough. And when he's killing these mercs, the nice thing about having these mercs all loaded with gear is he is squishing them with cars. You don't have to see them. He's throwing them on their neck so their necks snap. There's a scene that's really cool where they show a car and you see bullets going off and people screaming. Like, they really did a good job of not needing the R rating, but still showing enough violence in the film. No, I dug it. Hey, can we do something real quick?
Sure.
I want to do a Vin Diesel movie draft, right?
Oh, nice.
And but we can't pick any Fast movies or Iron Giant.
Or Iron Giant.
Yeah.
But we can do Groot.
Yes, we can do Groot. We can do Groot. But I'm not going to do Groot. You going to do Groot?
I don't think so. I get that everyone loves that character, but it's not a Vin Diesel character.
All right.
You know what I mean? It's so strange.
No. Yeah, it's just I Am Groot, I guess. It's a James Gunn character,
I guess. Yes.
All right, so pick a number one or two.
Two.
All right. Yeah. You know what's funny? I do two every single time on every podcast, and I'm just waiting for the person to say one because they psych themselves out. When I play paper, I don't know if you know, when I play paper, rock, scissors, I always just do rock. And if you just do paper, you'll beat me every time. But I love it when someone's like, I think he's going to switch, and they do scissors and I win.
Not one out of 10 times. You're like, I'm the best.
But I like getting into people's heads. Does that make sense? Like they're going to, he's going to switch it. All right. So you get first pick.
Okay. This is an easy pick for me. I'm going to pick Pitch Black.
Ooh.
I'm picking this movie first because I absolutely love it. I think it's probably his best film, mm-hmm. if not his best film in the top three. And when I first saw this film, I knew nothing about it. And I had a friend who invited me over to her house and some other people to watch it. And I immediately became obsessed with it. It is such an insane movie. And I really can't recommend it highly. I can't recommend it more. Like, just go out.
You can't recommend it.
Just go see this movie, guys. If you haven't, like, you're not a Vin fan if you haven't seen Pitch Black.
I like Roger Mitchell in it, Keith David, Cole Hauser. I dig it. It's a fun movie.
And what's crazy about it, he's not even the main character. He's like third bill.
I'm going to go with Saving Private Ryan.
Okay. That's good. Do you want to tell the story about Saving Private Ryan? Like, how he got into that movie?
No, how'd he get into it?
So, from what I understand, Steven Spielberg saw Vin Diesel's short film mm-hmm. and liked it so much that he wrote a role into Saving Private Ryan specifically for him.
Oh, man. And he's good in it, too, when he's shot just laying in the street. And he's like, take the letter. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
And that's
man, I feel like...
Oh, gosh. That movie gets me every time. Giovanni Ribisi. Oh, Barry Pepper.
Yeah, that movie's... real good. Okay, so this is gonna be a little bit difficult for me, but I'm going to go with XXX, The Return of Xander Cage.
Yes.
And here's why. So I think the third in this series, The Return of Xander Cage, is more tongue-in-cheek than the other two movies, and that makes it funnier.
Bikes turn into jet ski bikes.
Jet ski bikes. Like he understands what people want in this film. Which is him doing ridiculous things, and he leans into it really, really hard.
He skis down a mountain that's not – there's no snow.
Yeah, it's – oh, I was so excited when I found out they were doing another one of these movies, and I hope they're doing a – I guess this would be a fourth one.
Oh, I can't wait. I hope they bring back the cast. I hope there's more Michael Bisping and Tony Jaa.
Well, you were saying earlier that he gives shots – to a lot of different people, and he puts together international casts. And The Return of Xander Cage is an example of an international cast.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it felt like he learned a lot from the Fast and Furious franchise and then translated that over into The Return of Xander Cage and then again into Bloodshot.
My number two, Boiler Room.
Yes. Okay. I've never seen Boiler Room.
Great cast, like loaded. Well, it's him and Giovanni Ribisi back together. It's more of like a... It's kind of like a Wall Street-esque type film, but a bunch of young, cool actors just in suits dealing with business and like other things that come with it. But yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. Like, it's worth watching. It's a good performance from Vin Diesel. He's a different guy. He wears suits in it, if you can believe that. Ben Affleck's in it, like Nikki Catt, Nia Long. Scott Kahn's in it. Scott Kahn has a role. It's just them walking around in suits being cool.
That's so different from all his other roles, which is him walking around in tank tops being cool.
and Jamie Kennedy's good in it. Jamie Kennedy's in a suit being cool.
Wow, that's not true. When is Jamie Kennedy cool?
What? Dude, he's great in Scream. He's awesome in Bowfinger.
Right, he's terrible in The Son of Mask.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. My third pick is one I think that people are going to be shocked that I'm going to pick, and that is Babylon AD. This film is maligned. I actually think it's pretty rad, and I bought it for like $3 when it was on sale about a year ago. I dig it. I think people should watch it.
I remember the production design looks really good. It's just a different film than people were expecting from Vin, I would say.
Yeah. They were expecting something less melancholy.
All right. My third pick's Knock Around Guys, and it gets that because of Vin's speech about beating up 500 people in fistfights on the streets, and then he beats up a bunch of people in a bar. And it's good. I mean, this movie has like John Malkovich, Barry Pepper, him. It's quite dark, Dennis Hopper. But yeah, it's worth watching, and it's just a great speech from Vin Diesel. So I recommend it for that.
Okay. My fourth one, I'm going to go with The Last Witch Hunter.
Yes.
So here's a great story about that. This character, Calder, is based off Vin's real-life D&D character. Basically, him and his friends are just like, this is a good character. You've been playing this for like 20 years. Let's turn it into a movie. And I also love that Xander Cage, his other character, has a tattoo of Vin Diesel's real D&D character on his stomach. It's so ridiculous. So many layers.
He's such a nerd, and I love it. I'm just such a big fan of that. Just go for it, man. Oh, it's perfect. My fourth one's Riddick. I know it's not The Chronicles of Riddick, but I don't know. I like the cast. I like the first one third of it. I don't know about the last two thirds, but I like him. There's the first third of the movie's him just fighting one monster. Like, he's trying to get around it. And that's, you know, if I could watch that three times, I'd be really happy. But yeah, that's my next one is Riddick.
Are you excited for the next Riddick movie?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, he apparently finds his planet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked. It's been too long. So the last one came out, 2013? So we're due for some Riddick action.
Yes,
totally
please.
Underrated. My final pick is also going to be Riddick, but it's The Chronicles of Riddick. This movie, I remember when it came out, people were like, this movie is trying to be huge, trying to set up a world, or trying to do all these things, and it fails. It didn't fail to me. I really dig it. I really dig how weird it is.
I mean, you have Tandy Newton running around. You got Carl Urban running around. Judi Dench, him. A bunch of weird stormtrooper guards. It's just a dorky, great film.
I mean, it's goth Star Trek.
Yes. And it just proves how dorky he is, and it's great.
He's such a nerd. He's like fantasy and sci-fi. And Riddick binds all those things into one. And it's like trying to be Star Wars or Jupiter Ascending, you know, where there's a mix of magic and science.
All right. And my last one, I'm cheating here, and hopefully you don't get angry. But I'm going to say Bloodshot.
Okay. You know, do you think Bloodshot's in his... Like, it is one of his top 10 roles?
No.
No? It's hard to say.
Okay, because he's emotional in this movie. He does show moments, but I think he's learned to hire people around him. Like, I think his best roles are still in... Oh, I never picked XXX1.
No, we didn't. We skipped right over it.
Oh, crap. Whatever. But I think his best roles are in Pitch Black, The Fast and the Furious, Knock Around Guys, Boiler Room... Like those movies where he, Saving Private Ryan, Find Me Guilty, even A Man Apart, just different roles for him where he shows more vulnerability, I guess. Yeah. But I would say his top, what are his top three roles?
Okay, that's really good. Again, I think it's
Pitch Black.
I think Pitch Black is number one by far. I think he does a really good job in the original Fast and Furious,
yes,
and probably Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, I would give him those. That sounds about right. Just simply because they're three different characters. Yeah, let's do that. I like that. Because Fast and the Furious XXX isn't a performance, like a role.
No. You know what's a moment in Bloodshot that we didn't talk about that shows him being vulnerable, that shows that Vin Diesel does have the capability of being a good actor when he wants and when he's not leading into his brand, is when he is talking to his wife and he finds out that it's not his wife, it was his ex-girlfriend, and they haven't seen each other in 5 years. He puts this look on his face, and he turns, tilts his head, and he says, 5 years?
Yeah.
And it's the most emotional, resonant moment of the film. You feel that Garrison has just, like, broken in that moment. You don't see a lot of that from him. And sometimes I wish I would see him step into these other roles. It just feels like maybe he's typecast, or maybe he's even typecast himself into this mad dog 90s to early 2000s type of character.
You know, even in Fast and Furious, he showed emotion, right? Like when he's like, you betrayed me. Like he's you know what? That's a really good scene. And I also like that his wife didn't just leave her family for him. She's like, I have kids.
True.
She's like, go back to your dad. Like, you were a terrible husband. I wanted you to be around more, and you never were. And then you disappeared. Like, I got my life now. Get away from me. I kind of dug that. Like, that's a different plot line than we're used to, I would say.
So you know what I'm excited for? So I know that we are not going to get Fast and Furious 9 this year. It's been moved back to next year. That's sad. But if you think about Fast and Furious in terms of story arc, in the next film, most likely the fast guys lose.
Yeah.
Because you have to have them reach bottom before they can achieve success. And that gives us the opportunity of seeing Vin really act. Like Vin as Dom, like showing true emotion. He did that in the last one in 8, but I would like to see like him really do it in the next one.
That'd be great. I'd love to see that.
Well, we have a year.
All right, so we got those. We just started draft. Do you want to do our anything? Oh, so you had something fun in the last thing between the three super soldiers that are in this movie. So we have KT, and then with four super soldiers, we have KT. We have Ray Garrison, we have Jimmy Dalton, and then we have, oh gosh, I forgot his name. What's the other guy's name with the eyesight?
I mean, I was calling them legs, eyes,
yep,
and lungs.
Legs, eyes, lungs, and blood. All right, so yeah. All right, which would you rather, if you could be legs, eyes, lungs, or blood, which one would you be?
So I generally think that the eyes character is very interesting. And I don't think he was necessarily utilized great in this film, but if you can see everything and know what's coming towards you, you can avoid everything. One of the mistakes I think they made in this film was they gave him knives. Why would you give a guy who's dependent on being able to know information being next to someone? Like, you would want him to be like a mile away on a roof with a sniper pistol, or not pistol, a rifle.
Would that be an interesting pistol?
Yeah, just this is a mile pistol.
I would be legs, because I think he's least dependent on someone. Someone can turn off Vin Diesel. Someone can turn off eyes. Someone can turn off lungs. With legs, you just get some fancy legs and you're good to go.
Yeah,
that's me.
I do think his exoskeleton stuff was pretty interesting, and the fight scene where he was boxing with it was pretty cool.
Yeah, poor Outlander though, he lost.
Yeah, yeah. But the ladies don't lose because he was in this film.
Yeah, exactly. But I like the boxing. It stabbed right through Vin's shoulder.
That was my idea.
How many times has Vin been shot in the shoulder and just forgotten about it?
Every single movie. Yes. Every movie he's ever been in. Even The Pacifier. You know what? He was shot in the shoulder.
And he was on a jet ski, too.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so one more thing before we get out of here. We're going to do a unkillable character draft. So we each pick 5, and then we're gonna bring it down to 10. We're gonna pick 5, get a total of 10, and break it back down to 5. How's that sound?
That sounds great. And we left off Deadpool.
Yes. No Deadpool.
Yeah, he's a ringer.
Yeah, leave him alone. And so, can I get first pick?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm gonna go with Catwoman from Batman Returns.
Oh, that's so smart.
Because she has 9 lives.
Absolutely.
Right?
I like how you have to specify from Batman Returns and not from that horrible Halle Berry movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because what I like, this one really gives her the, you see her die a couple times, and she just keeps getting, she falls in a truck of kitty litter, falls on the ground. So yeah, I'm going Catwoman, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah. Okay. Let me see here. I'm going to go a wild card too, just because I remember this scene and thinking, oh, this scene's pretty fun. Dorian Gray from the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh yeah. Why not?
He's immortal, mostly.
Yeah. And then, you know what? I liked, what was that, Penny Dreadful? I liked Dorian Gray was in there, too.
Yeah, it's a really good series. I'm looking forward to the new one.
Lead of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I like that. That's a lot of fun. Next, I'm going to do something random here. I just got to do it. I'm going to say Ernest P. Worrell, because the guy has a prophecy and Ernest goes to camp. All the bullets miss him. He is electrocuted and lives. That should have killed him. He is, put into a trash compactor, crushed, and then the trash lands on his head and he survives. He's stronger than Wolverine. He has impenetrable skin. So I'm doing that.
Okay, here's a real question for you. Bloodshot versus Ernest.
Ernest.
Yeah, 100%. There's no way Ernest loses.
Because he's fulfilled prophecies. Like, he's not going to go down.
Physics doesn't apply.
Exactly.
No, nothing applies to Ernest.
In our Ernest Scared Stupid podcast, he picks up a troll that is capable, this troll is so strong it can pull a truck, and its body can survive a full-on truck strike. He picks that troll up with, like, it's nothing, and he holds the troll out with his arms, so he's standing, his arms are out holding the troll, and he's not struggling. He is a powerful man.
He's basically a superhero. He has his own outfit. His suit, his superhero suit, it's just a Canadian tuxedo.
I love it. Oh, he already has it. All right, cool. Who's your second pick?
Okay, I mentioned this character earlier in the podcast. It is Jason Voorhees from Jason X.
Oh my gosh, Mecha Jason.
Yeah, he has regenerative capabilities. They don't mention it in any other movies, but they mention in this movie that makes him count.
That makes me so... And I love that design. That is a brilliant design of that character. I love it.
When I was putting my list together, I actually struggled on whether to include certain characters, and I decided not to include vampires, mummies, and I guess you would call them zombie-like creatures.
I mean, I think you're at a pretty good spot right now. I love this.
Okay.
All right. So my next one is what am I gonna do? I have so many good ones. I'm gonna go with, because I got to promote this movie. I'm gonna go with Zohan from You Don't Mess with the Zohan.
Okay.
Because he grabs bullets with his fingers. He catches them in his ear. He catches one in his nose. He swims faster than jet skis. Or a jet ski. Yeah. Like, the guy is just impossibly strong. So I got to pick him.
Okay. That's good. I haven't seen that movie, but you've mentioned it a couple of times. I may have to check that out.
It's very weird and you need to watch it.
Okay. I'm going to go with Binks the Cat from Hocus Pocus.
Oh, I love that.
Unkillable.
Unkillable. No, you can't. He gets run over by a car.
He does. Also, if this team is going to have to go on a mission, he's our scout.
Yep. Wow. Because, that'd be a perfect scout.
It's also a team that could just, like, walk in someplace, like, shoot me, whatever.
All right. This is going to be weird, but I'm going to say Luke Devereaux from Universal Soldier.
That is a really good pick. Does that movie hold up?
Dolph Lundgren's performance holds up.
Okay. He always holds up. Are you kidding me?
He has a monologue that's show-stopping. But the thing is, why I'm doing this is Luke Devereaux, played by Jean-Claude Van Damme, he's been in a bunch of these movies. So he just keeps popping up in them. So he hasn't been killed. So we got to go Luke Devereaux from Universal Soldier.
Okay, that's a really good one. We need to pick an immortal from the Highlander series.
Yes.
And I want to work together because we have multiple options. But of course, there's Connor McCloud. But there's also the Kurgan. There's also Ramirez. And there's also Mario Peebles.
Oh, we got... Okay. I love the Kurgan, but... Okay. It's Peebles' performance in that movie is...
Is insane.
I kind of like him.
I low-key love that movie. not even joking. Like, it is pretty rad. Let's go with Mario.
Mario. Yes.
Yeah, there's a scene where they cut him in half and he sticks his tongue out and puts his body back together. And I was like, that's amazing.
And so I want everyone to know we've picked a bunch of different characters for this draft.
We did.
So we're not just repeating these things. We're trying to bring something different here. So do I have one left?
Yeah, we both do. That was my number four.
Okay. Do you have one readily available?
I have several readily available.
Okay. You get one, because I'm trying to think of a different one for this one to make it seem more fun for you and I, so we're not rehashing this.
Okay, yeah. We talked a little bit about this character. I haven't seen this movie, but I think in terms of characters, it's kind of interesting. And this character is Painkiller Jane from the sci-fi original TV movie. And so she's a comic book character, so it fits. But her whole thing is that she can't be killed, but she feels everything, so it's just a lot of her taking painkillers and getting wrecked.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's really what that's like part of her thing, just like guzzling Tylenol and getting wrecked.
And then, but she doesn't get hurt. Wait, no.
No, she can't. She feels it all.
Oh, but she doesn't die.
She doesn't die.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like a movie that could be made today and it would be really rad. But it was like an early 2000s sci-fi original movie.
Oh, I like that idea a lot. All right. I guess I'm up?
Yes.
Oh, man. Okay. I just got to do it because I think it's funny. But I'm just going to go with Ace Ventura from the Ace Ventura Pet Detective because he catches a bullet in his teeth. A shark attacks him, right? And he leaves the shark attack with nothing wrong with him. Then he gets spears in his legs in Ace Ventura 2. He's fine. He beats up an alligator. I mean, the guy can't be killed. So I'm just adding Ace Ventura.
Yeah. So I think we missed a really big one who's not on this list, and that is Eric Draven from The Crow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love that movie, but...
Does he count? Because he's sort of... I mean, he heals, but he's also sort of a zombie or a golem?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And when he gets shot... Oh, gosh. I don't know. It's such a tragic movie. People already love that movie. I think our list is weird enough.
Okay. We do have a really weird list.
All right. Who are we sticking with here? Let's try to make the weirdest, most interesting movie. So I like the idea of Painkiller Jane.
Okay. So let's this is going to be a team up movie, and this is like a crew that has to go do something.
Dirty Dozen-esque, Guardians of the Galaxy-esque.
Okay, so I 100% want Binks in this.
Okay, definitely got to have Binks.
Okay.
What about Catwoman?
I think Catwoman and Binks together, would they have chemistry?
I think they'd be buds.
They would be buds. Let's hold off on her and okay. go through what other characters on yours do we have?
Well, Ernest, Zohan, Ace Ventura, Luke Devereaux.
So I want Ernest on the team.
Gotta have Ernest.
Yeah, he's the heart.
Yeah.
He's the heart of the team, and he comes in at the end after, like, failing to just whoop someone.
We need Jason Voorhees, Mecca. We need the muscle.
Yeah, he's both the he's a unkillable muscle.
He's basically Drax and Groot combined.
Yeah. If we're along that line, I'm going to dump Dorian Gray. I don't think we need him if he doesn't seem as useful as these other characters.
I'm going to dump Luke Devereaux because he needs ice.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. So we're left with Ace Ventura and Zohan and Painkiller Jane.
And so right now we have Ace Ventura, Zohan, Mario Van Peebles, Catwoman, and Painkiller Jane.
Okay. I think we don't need both Ace Ventura and the Zohan, and we should pick one of those.
Can we do Zohan? Because everyone knows Ace Ventura.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. And we don't need all the we don't want it to turn into like a animal themed group.
Yeah, you're right. We don't need that's a good point. All right, so we have Zohan, we have Ernest, Binks, Jason Voorhees, and Painkiller Jane, and we have Mario Van Peebles and Catwoman left.
What's more interesting, Catwoman or Mario Van Peebles?
I mean, all right, Michelle Pfeiffer's performance is amazing, but imagine Mario Van Peebles in that ship.
With the ability to create illusions.
Yes.
And not be killable. And not being able to be killed. Okay, yeah. He's more powerful.
So we should go with Peebles.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to look up his character's name so we know what it is.
All right, and then we'll get rid of Painkiller Jane and Catwoman.
Yes. All right. His character is known as Kane.
Let's just keep it as Peebles.
Okay, sounds good.
So we have Zohan, Ernest P. Worrell, Binks the Cat, Jason Voorhees, and Mario Van Peebles.
That's Kane. The craziest list. It's awesome.
It's amazing. All right, hey, so any final thoughts before we get out of here about this movie, about Bloodshot?
I think it was unfairly attacked in the press. Definitely check it out. It's worth the 2 hours on a Friday night. It's fun. It might not, you know, change the world, but I still liked it.
Yeah, it's $45 million done well. Like a movie, it is, I don't see how you could hate it. So Megan loved it. Megan watched it, loved it. My in-laws loved it. I think if you just can enjoy yourself, sit back and watch some flower fights, you'll dig it. All right. Well, this was a lot of fun, man. Thanks for coming back and doing this twice with me.
Thank you.
All right. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for David Cross, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.